Now it's time for this.
The Executive Chair on Down to Business.
A square device, it's a tiny piece of plastic that allows you swipe sweater cards on your smartphone or tablet, essentially becoming a cash register without the cash. The company Square was co-founded 5 years ago by Jim McKelvey and Jack Dorsney. It has more than 600 employees and is now valued reportedly at over $6 billion. Jim McKelvey, he's an inventor, he's an entrepreneur, he's an artist, an author and licensed pilot. While perhaps best known for co-founding Square, one of Silicon Valley's hottest startups, McKelvey is in some circles better known as a master glass artist and author, having written the world's most widely read text on the subject, The Art of Fire. And I'm delighted he joins me now here right at the American Embassy in Dublin. Jim, you're very welcome to the programme.
Oh, thank you, Bobby.
Now, Jim, you're a very interesting character. Maybe you might bring us back a bit to the early days in St. Louis. You were an author before you were 19, so you got started early on this entrepreneurial journey that you've been on.
Well, it wasn't even called entrepreneurship back then. It was just frustration. When I was an undergraduate student, I was taking a class, and the professor had written a book, but I didn't care too much for it, and I casually remarked to my roommate that I thought I could write a better book than this piece of garbage the professor had written. And my roommate, being sort of a jerk, said, well, why don't you? And so that summer I spent researching and ultimately writing a book to replace the textbook that my professor had written. And one thing led to another. It got published, and then I got another book deal. And so I was an author at a very young age, quite by happenstance.
All these different things that go on, like, so if you're an author, you're inventing businesses, you're coming up with technology, you're involved in art in a huge way. How does your brain sort of subdivide to cover all these bases?
Well, I don't really consider myself a master of anything, but I'm pretty open-minded. And I'm also a very positive person in the sense that I believe most problems can be solved. So when I see a problem, I don't immediately think, oh, well, I'm not the guy to do that. I can usually, if I can do part of the solution, I usually assume that I can find others to help me do the rest. And so most of the things that I've done have been these team efforts. And the teams are in different sort of sports, but we all sort of work together.
I suppose your first business, I know, Myra Digital. Tell us a little bit about that first.
So that was the first big effort that I made. So that was after I wrote the books. And what happened, it was sort of tragic. I was at the time working as a glass artist. I had a job with IBM. And I had another company that made a cabinetry for CDs, which had just been invented. And the three businesses were okay. They were all very, you know, sort of middling. And then my mother died very suddenly. And I had a sort of personal moment where I realized that I was mediocre at everything I did and decided that it would be better to concentrate. So I stopped blowing glass, I closed my business, and I quit IBM and concentrated on a company which was Mira. And Mira is still around today, but its focus has changed three or four times over the last 20 years. And its focus now is technical publishing, but at the time it was a software company.
And that ability to reinvent almost in mid-stride, you were trying, I think, in Mira to compete with Adobe. It wasn't working out. You were able to get into publishing. Yeah. That ability to actually change tack surely has been one of the great Jim McKelvey traits.
Well, yeah, it's easy to change tack if you're about to be killed. So Mira had it essentially died two or three times, but Adobe really put a stake in our coffin with Adobe Acrobat, which was a competing product to our software. And so we realized that there was no way for us to fight a company that was, you know, 1,000 times our size. And at the time, we decided to pivot into another market. And it turned out to be a good move. But I always think about it in terms of, you know, there are two types of pivots. One is the one you have to do. That was sort of like the one we did. And the other are the ones where you look at the market and say, we want to voluntarily move before it goes away.
Yeah.
So the second pivot that Mira had was when the compact disc was essentially being replaced as a data store by the World Wide Web. And our pivot away from Adobe was to make a product using Adobe where we took all the brochures at a conference and put them on a CD-ROM. We'd give it out. So it was a great product. The company was growing like crazy. But when the internet arose, it was clear that the internet was going to wipe us out. And I went to my staff and I said, look, guys, you know, we've got about 2 years here before the internet just destroys our core business. Now, the core business was making all this money, but it was clear that to me that it was going to die. And I tried to get the team to pivot. And I guess I'm not a very good manager or something, but I couldn't get anyone to change their behavior. The only people who would really follow me were one salesman, our CFO, who saw the numbers, and then a 15-year-old intern. And the intern was Jack Dorsey. So that's how I started working with Jack. He was,
I was just going
to
ask you that.
Yeah, so Jack was an intern. He came to work for Mira back when he was 15. And, you know, at the time, Jack and I had a great rapport, and the rest of the company wasn't listening to me. So I figured, well, instead of fighting it out with all these people who are sort of wedded to the current business, I'll just go off and start a new business with Jack. So that's essentially what we did.
Tell us a little bit about your relationship with Jack Dorsey. You've been, as you say, he was an intern with you age 15. So you've done a number of things together. And I suppose let's talk about Square. You're both involved in that as well.
Well, you know, friend and colleague for 20 years. Jack and I go back a long ways. We have very different styles, which I think is good. And an interview with me is very different than an interview with him. And I think we complement each other. And it's been fun. I think when Jack and I started Square, both of us had a sort of situation in our hands where we really didn't have to do something else. I mean, Jack had just founded Twitter. I had all these other companies. And so it was really a case of voluntary association. Yeah. It wasn't like we said, oh, God, you know, we got to go do something else. Mm-hmm. I guess I'll work with this guy. And so Square really started as a genuine interest to work together again, and it grew into something, again, that was more than we expected.
You know, we've talked about your ability to change tack in that, but you don't traditionally sell your businesses. You stay on while businesses change. You're not a serial starter and seller of business. You like to stay, even though you don't take as a direct involvement as you had in the early days, but you're not a guy who comes in, sets it up, flogs it on, and starts something else.
Yeah, so I'm not big on exits.
Right.
I've really never had any exits. And I don't look for them because, you know, the thought with me is, well, you've got this entity that's functioning well. And in my case, I've always owned a, you know, pretty significant stake without a lot of investors, you know, pressuring me for some sort of liquidity. And so it's been very simple for me to, you know, keep the business going. Now, what I do is I remove myself from the daily operations. I'm not a very good operations person. I'm pretty good at starting things, but I'm not good at, you know, running on a daily basis. So once they're running well, I then try to step out and let it, you know, be in the hands of people who like and enjoy running it.
Is the quest for equity with investors and that in Silicon Valley, is that effectively, like if you can do without that, if you can manage without taking an investment, like the pressure, as you just mentioned it there, the venture capital pressure to, I suppose, play to somebody else's agenda. Is that really what you've traditionally avoided?
I don't specifically avoid it. It's just not been relevant for the businesses that I've started. So if you need a significant amount of money and you're on a very, very fast growth trajectory, then taking investment is one of the few ways to get that, unless you're independently wealthy. There's no really other way to grow. And at the speed at which some of these companies have to grow, then there's really no good alternative right now. But we continually evolve these business models. And I think over time, we will continue to evolve models which may look a lot different than today. But right now, if you need to grow fast, venture capital is probably the number one way to do it.
Yeah. You say as well that you like to take simple ideas run by people who are committed to those ideas. Is it as simple as that?
Well, no. I mean, there's a lot of complexity. Run by itself is a three-letter but tremendously complex word. I'm not particularly good at running things. I may be good at running away. I'm good at starting. My specialty is when there are a lot of unknowns and when in that environment when you have to execute very quickly on very limited information. I'm reasonably comfortable doing that. But just to say to run something, it's very difficult. And to run something well takes sometimes decades of practice.
Now, my guest is Jim McKelvey. I'm out here in the American Embassy. We're talking all sorts of things, technology, expansion, exits. Jim, can I ask you about Launch Code, another initiative that you've been involved in? As I understand it, it allows, I suppose, people who don't maybe come the traditional route through academia, it allows them a career in software. Is that a reasonable summary?
I think that's a very good summary. Sure. And I have trouble describing Launch Code briefly, but if I had to be brief, I would say that Launch Code is a way for people to become programmers, without following traditional paths. And when I say become programs, I mean get a job.
Okay.
So in the U.S., it's fairly well known that you don't have to have a degree to be a good programmer. As a matter of fact, most of the best programmers don't have traditional four-year degrees. And in Silicon Valley, it's accepted. But in the rest of the country, there's this very strong bias. Unless you have certain credentials, they will not hire you. The companies won't hire you. And so you have this terrible irony where in the United States, for instance, we have a 500,000 current shortage. So President Obama says that there are 500,000 open jobs in programming today. And yet the schools produce maybe 14,000 graduates a year with credentials. So you've got this massive shortfall that's never going to be solved by traditional education. And on the flip side, you've got this industry that pretty much acknowledges that a formal degree is not necessary to be a good programmer. But yet the market keeps failing to solve this problem. So what LaunchCode is very simple. We take people who want to be programmers and we test them. If they know how to program, we put them to work immediately in jobs with, you know, well, we got 300 employers right now and we'll probably have 1,000 by the end of the year. We have relationships with these employers that allow them to sort of bypass their HR department. So we say, oh, you know, Bobby, yeah, he may not look like a coder, but we've tested him. He's good. Give him a shot.
Right.
And if you're no good, they fire you. So there's no guarantee that you'll keep the job, but we at least get the people the chance. And 90% of our people maintain the jobs full time. The cool part is that if people come to us without the necessary experience, we have partnerships with a bunch of educators, particularly Harvard and edX, that give free online education that can get people up to a level of competence where we can give them a job. So the story with LaunchCode is literally you can come and we've taken people with no programming experience, give them about 6 months to learn where they don't pay any money, and then we get them a job at a major company.
Finally, Jim, I want to ask you about art. Is it all about art? Art for art's sake, money for God's sake. Is the reason you do all these wonderful things, is it your quest to be an artist, glass blowing?
You know, ironically, it was the opposite in my case because I started Mira, and when I started Mira, Mira wasn't making any money and I needed an income. And I happened to know how to blow glass. So glass blowing was the way I fed myself while I was starting a software company. And then, you know, a decade later, I'd made all this money in software, and I turned around and built a glass studio with that money. But my initial entry into art was because I needed funding. And I love making it. So glass is a fantastic material. It is captivating, and it just never gets boring. So the fact that I practiced glass blowing for, you know, over 20 years now, I'm not a master. I'm competent. But I've seen people who are, you know, 1,000 times better than me in all sorts of areas. And it's very, you know, enticing to keep learning a skill every day.
Now that you're in Ireland, if you get a chance, go and see, and maybe you won't be able to see them now because it's under renovation at the moment, but there's a wonderful glass artist called Harry Clark. He did all the stained glass windows in Bewley's and Grafton Street. Wonderful artist. If you get a chance to check it out, you'd really enjoy it.
I really would, and I'm very jealous of the material that you guys use here. The lead crystal history of Ireland is so fantastic, and lead crystal has a much longer working time. So there are certain shapes you can only make with the glass that they make here in Ireland.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. That's Jim McKelvey. He's the director and co-founder of Square, and we wish you every success with Square. I know you don't want to talk about it, but whatever happens, we wish you well.
Thank you, Bobby.
The Executive Chair on Down to Business.